This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, episode 83. We will catch up on the latest cloud news from AWS and Azure, recorded live June 17th, 2015.
Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Cole.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it.
Hey AC, how you doing, buddy?
I'm doing okay this morning. How about yourself, CJ?
I am off and running to a great summery day. A couple of espressos in, I'm feeling good, buddy.
Hey, your video's looking a little blue though. You don't look so, you look a little wintry.
I definitely feel better than I look at this video, I tell you.
It's a blue tint, you're looking a little smurf.
Yeah, I don't know what happened, man. I think my webcam got cooked in the hot summer Seattle weather.
Right. Hot Seattle summer. That's there's a couple oxymorons thrown together.
Hey, man, we hit 87 or 90 Fahrenheit, which is like, you know, over 30 in real temperature units.
That's toasty. I went out for a run yesterday here in Florida. I went out for a run. I think I left the house at about 7:25 and it was 89. But the heat index was already up to like about, which is like the equivalent of like the wind chill for winter. But the heat index was up to about 98, 96, 97.
Do humans boil if they hit 100?
No, they don't. I can tell you that firsthand.
That's any metric.
Yeah. I can tell you that firsthand. It doesn't happen Fahrenheit. But we've had no rain for multiple days now. We don't look like we're going to have it for another week or so. My yard is so dry. So
ouch.
I know the Californians are rolling their eyes at me right now. Just be like, really? You're complaining about no rain? The people in Texas are like, we got some.
Yeah, they got too much for sure.
Yeah. So, hey, it's global warming, man. Let's get all the political stuff and get things. Extreme weather, baby.
Hey, man, I'm satisfied. Donald Trump's running for president.
Oh, my God. What is that? It's the 2016, the great comb over.
I heard this on the radio yesterday. They were like, Donald Trump is running for president. And I was like, first up, I was like, what the hell? Why? And then the second thing was like, man, that dude is a savvy marketer.
I mean, the guy's obviously successful. You may not like him, but the dude's successful. I have become so jaded on the political side. Like my father-in-law was in town and he was like, you know, this next election's a big deal. And I looked at him, I'm like, I don't care.
Every election's a big deal.
He's like, how can you not be paying attention to it? I'm like, it's a bunch of retreads. Everyone's a retread that's up there. There's everything. Nothing is new. They don't give a crap about what you're thinking. They're going to sit there and talk about whatever they want to talk about. Hillary's not going to say a damn thing for 9 months because she just has to get through a primary. And once she gets through the primary, then she'll start talking.
Yeah, just don't screw it up, right? Yeah.
And all the Republicans are going to see who can be the most ultra-religious conservative white right wing to win the popular vote.
I'm looking forward to Bernie Sanders being like the dude on the rocking chair at the front of the house, like throwing like these classic zingers left and right and doesn't really care who he takes down.
Oh my God. I mean, like, how can he's so old too. It's like, how can you put somebody up there?
I know, but it's totally entertaining. Like, anyway.
Yeah, it's, I guess so.
Not that politics in the US should be entertaining, but hey, it is a little bit. And so we might as well bask in the hilarity of it all.
Yeah, it's, well, okay. Yeah, sure.
and then suffer in silence when one of these drongos gets elected.
Oh God. You see him vote. It's like, oh my God, really? It's like, did he really win?
Yeah. Hold on. I'd like you to pick from A, B, or C.
Or D, crap.
Oh, it's easy to throw stones, but I tell you what, there is no way I'd ever get into that business.
No. I guess the part that is so irritating to me, and I guess I'm the jaded political person now, where it's just that every few years they get together, they all start saying how much they care about all the stuff what the population wants. And let's face it, they don't give a rat's ass. And if they do, it doesn't have any impact on you. There's very few things they do that actually have an impact on you as an individual. So, I mean, yeah, there's some things like, oh, what about the healthcare plan? Yes, it impacted me. But really, like, my voice was going to have any impact on it. So as far as I'm concerned, f*** it, man. I'm going to keep doing this that I'm doing, and I'm not going to waste my time on stuff I have no influence on. So I don't give a shit.
It does kind of stun me. I've got to tell you, like, having lived outside of the States for the majority of my life and then coming here, it does absolutely astound me how much airtime and how many brain cycles this stuff consumes, how long it consumes the population for. It's kind of mind-blowing.
Oh, it's, yeah.
I mean, it takes a year to be elected, right?
It's it takes more than that.
It's like a 12-month or 18-month process, right?
The election isn't for a year and a half.
Yeah, there you go. Dude, New Zealand, we throw up a couple of plastic signs and vote the next day. It's piss cake.
No, I wish it was like that right now.
No, it's not really like that. But anyway, let's get off politics before it gets super boring.
Let's go to the cloud.
Bum, bum, bum. Hey, so I guess, we've got some stuff to talk about today. We've got some cloud news and some bits and pieces. Why don't you want to kick things off?
Yeah. Hey, so, last week in our recording got a little screwed up at the very end. I'm sure people could pick up with the fact that things finished quite abruptly. And it was because we had a great little thing that we were doing for about 2 or 3 minutes.
Drop the mic.
Yeah.
And leave.
Yeah, I was done. I just wanted to go outside. For some reason, my mic stopped recording my track and yours kept recording. So we lost everything is like super gold for you. Like, you guys can't see this. CJ's video is got this weird tint going. So first we already said it was blue, but then he just picked up some stuff. And now it looks like he's got this, 20,000 karat gold watch on.
But it's actually silver, which is really strange.
Your ring is the same way. And then the paper clip you just had in your hand also looked gold.
I'm a gold digger.
This is crazy, man. You know what you need to go do is just go get like a big piece of metal. So it looks like you got a giant gold bar. Your eyes are gold. You're looking a little jaundiced, my friend. You need to stop drinking.
Yeah.
So anyway, at the very end, we had a really cool discussion. We were asking for, but we had to cut it out because it lost my recording. And last week we talked about, skill sets and getting ramped up for the cloud and working with a career and stuff. And one of the asks that we had is that, we'd really be curious to find out what everybody's opinion is on the same topic. So if you have any thoughts about from the last episode, we'd really like to hear what those thoughts were. And then we found an article actually in the last week that was posted on the New Relic website, New Relic or the New Relic blog, that's called The 6 Key Skills You Need to Build a Career in the Cloud. There's part one and part two. Part one is just skills 1 through 3. Part two is skills 4 through 5. So, hey, I thought we'd just run through these really quick. And you and I can, I know we don't agree on all of this stuff.
Yeah.
Unfortunately, I think that this article has a feel like they outsourced and said, we need some cloud articles for our blog. Can you go write some stuff?
Some of it's interesting. Some of it, not so much.
Yeah. So like the first one, it says, hey, your first skill is called technologies and platforms. And the point they're trying to make, which I was like.
As opposed to no technologies and no platforms.
Yeah. Hey, great. Let's just go for the low hanging fruit here.
Yeah. Well, first, you might need to know something. Okay.
Go do some yard work. I took a shovel and I dug some dirt.
Yeah.
Good job there, buddy. So, hey, this first one is technologies and platforms. It says seasoned IT pros don't need to abandon their prior experience to prep for a cloud career, but you need to add some new skills. So basically it boils down to they're asking you or saying, hey, do you want to go for one vendor? Like, do you want to focus on Azure? Do you want to focus on AWS? Or do you want to focus on like a multi-platform experience? So you're taking advantage of like the OpenStack from Rackspace. You're taking advantage of the Google stack, the AWS stack or anything. So
this is not what I would call a key skill. It's more like a decision you're going to have to make.
Yeah. What's your emphasis?
Right.
Are you a jack of all trades? Or are you going to niche down? So to me, I think that you're more marketable. You have a better chance of getting more work by niching as far down as you can and being a specialist and not being a jack of all trades. When you're a jack of all trades, then you're just one of many people that are out there and it's easy to pick between those different people. If you're a niche, then it's like, I want a guy that knows this, or I want a girl that's really good at this, or a company that's really good at this one thing. So to me,
yeah.
I think you want to niche down, but that's one of the ones that they had.
Well, it sort of leads into point number two, which is integration and multi-cloud environments. Mm. So basically they're saying here, hey, based on your choice in number one, it doesn't really matter anyway because you're going to have to do integration and have to deal with multiple clouds regardless, and integration of data across different types of apps and services and things like that.
Or on-prem and versus a hybrid kind of a scenario.
And you've noticed, I've noticed building software is, obviously real different in the cloud than it is on-prem. And I would say the one rash generalization I would make about that is that cloud development to me feels a lot more like you're knitting together a few independent blocks of things and most of your work is doing the, you know, is integration work between different services or different capabilities, then it would be on-prem. So I guess that's what they're trying to get at here.
I guess that's more of a PaaS style offering than it is doing like IaaS, doing more like VMs or even living in like a Docker kind of a scenario.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's another thing where they just kind of say, decide, do you want to go with SaaS? Do you want to go with IaaS? Do you want to go with PaaS? You know, what are you looking to specialize in? There's needs for all of them. So you just kind of decide what suits your boat a little bit more. I know one that is more interesting to me, it has the most forward aspects to it. And that's to me, it's PaaS. But I mean, I get the other ones. I get IaaS has got a significant importance today.
Definitely.
The next one is interesting. And we're not going to dwell on this one, but it's trainings and certifications. That's a skill you need, really. I don't know how they get that.
Yeah. Plus, I totally disagree.
Yeah, I agree. I'm right there with you. I think certifications are a bunch of bullshit for the most part.
Yeah. It obviously depends on the ones, but if people are jazzed to go get some certs, go for it. But you know, I don't think it's a key skill you've got to have. Let's put it that way.
No. And they do link off to Tom's IT Pro website, tomsitpro.com. We'll put a link to all of these in the show notes. But it talks about the best cloud IT certifications for 2015. And I know he listed them out just to throw out there. There's a CompTIA cloud. There's an MCSE private cloud. There's a VMware cloud, an AWS certified solutions architect. And there's a few other ones that they list as well. So there's a few of them that we'll link to in the show notes as well.
Yeah. Okay. So number four, which is in the second part of the series, is entitled Organizational Strategies and Processes. And this is really all about DevOps, right? So they basically say, hey, in the cloud, you've got to have a really solid DevOps approach around, you know, releasing software, developing and releasing software, right? And that DevOps is distinct from is a distinct IT job. It's kind of different than, you know, typical, you know, on-prem IT pro work, but super important, right? Because if you don't have a really smooth DevOps pipe from the moment a developer writes and checks in some code through automated testing, build, continuous integration and deployment, out through test and out through stage and out into prod, then you're in for some trouble. So DevOps is definitely something I would say is an absolutely critical strategy to adopt early on and is a key skill that people should, if it's not what they want to get into, it should be a key skill they identify that they don't know anything about and should get somebody to do.
Yeah, I totally agree.
It's kind of interesting because this is a role that really, I don't know, do you think it existed before cloud development? Like, I never saw anything called DevOps before cloud.
I didn't see it mentioned. I mean, it was always...
I mean, the tasks were kind of done, right?
Yeah, the tasks were done. And I think that the work was still being done. I just think that a lot of it was, there wasn't a lot of... they didn't have this label associated with it.
Yeah.
And so now with developers having so much more kind of configuration and stuff that they need to do with the different services they're working with, whereas before when the IT pros owned the servers, the devs weren't really working on the servers in production, whereas today that's kind of important as part of the development. So you kind of have to know, you have to be more intimate with those things.
I guess it gets us over that whole, oh yeah, the developers ran it and works on my machine and then they gave it to the sysadmins and nothing would install or work right. And then, so this role is kind of like a foot in both of those camps, right?
Yeah.
Nice.
So number five was management and negotiation skills. Yet I just got another one that I think is a bit of a crappy description here, but yes, you have to have management negotiation skills, but it's not just with, that's not a cloud skill. That's just a job skill.
Yeah.
So I think it was kind of lame.
Yeah. I don't know what they're trying to get at here about it being a key skill based for the cloud. Like that's kind of an important skill to have. Your management and negotiation skills, good skill to have in life.
Yeah. You need to be able to breathe too. We can put that one on the list.
Yeah. Must be able to suck in oxygen.
You must know how to do copy-paste.
Yep. Number six, matrix and analytics. This one is all about being able to measure stuff, right? So, again, this is kind of not the most enamoring of these key skills, but I would say, you know, metrics and analytics is important regardless of how you're developing and releasing software. But I would say I think the cloud just sort of amplifies it or magnifies it a little bit, right? Because you are going to have or going to want a tight rein on usage and costs for running these things, a little probably more than you care about on-prem. But things like application performance. That's something you should be measuring and being very analytical over on-prem as much as in the cloud, right? So super important to monitor your perf and all that stuff, no matter where you deploy. But, you know, analytics is definitely something that has grown in popularity, I would say, or maybe in prominence over the last few years.
Yeah.
In general, I would say, and the cloud just seems to amplify that.
Yeah, I think that the big thing here, that this is something you do need to pay attention to when you're a cloud developer or even a manager. And it's because, you know, when we're traditionally building applications that are not cloud focused and they're more working on servers that we've procured and we're running in our environment, once you spend a couple $1,000s on a server and you stand it up, and you just keep throwing more applications at it until you need another one. And you don't really have to worry so much about perf because you have an upper limit on what you can actually accomplish with that one server. And the more servers you throw at it, yes, it's going to cost more, but each one is like this huge additional step up. And with one of the big benefits that people look at with the cloud is they say, you know, you can save money on it because you don't have these big expenses. Well, that's true, but you also have no upper limit in terms of the scale that you can essentially do. So it's really easy to build really bad software that is really inefficient, but runs really well because you can throw so many resources at it, but you don't realize that you're actually spending a ton of money by doing it. So in a sense, it makes it easier. In one sense, I think it makes it easier to build stuff without thinking about architecture, scale, and performance, but at the cost of throwing more hardware, more processing power at it. So it is something you need to pay attention to.
Yeah, definitely. It
gives you a false sense of security, I guess.
Yeah, exactly.
Cool.
Okay, so we have another one. We've got some more news. Microsoft hands out more free cloud stuff to woo startups.
Woo!
So this is an article. I stuck it in our Microsoft Cloud Show Flipboard. You should go take a look at and subscribe to if you're not. That's just where I dump links to interesting articles and things. So this one is all about Microsoft is giving $120,000 in free cloud services to startups. And it's basically like a one-up kind of thing over Amazon and Google, who give out $100K a year. And this follows some news that Microsoft was giving to Y Combinator startups. They were giving them like $500,000 worth of cloud stuff for those who wanted it. And now this is $120,000 in free cloud computing stuff for a year. But it's available to startups who are part of the BizSpark Plus program. And so you can go join that, and as I understand it, you've got to be less than 5 years old. Your business has to be less than 5 years old, and has to have less than $1 million in revenue.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's the criteria. I don't know if that's the only criteria, but you should go read up about that. But I'm pretty sure those are the two things. So then you can go join the Microsoft BizSpark Plus program, and your application will be reviewed, and then you can from July the 1st. It'll be open for being able to get $120K worth of Azure credits.
Yeah, this is on top of the $500,000 that they last year gave to Silicon Valley's Y Combinator. Yeah, which is an attempt to get the cool kids, very young entrepreneurs, to try out Azure. So Microsoft said that the article that we have here says it sparked some blowback from existing Microsoft partners who were irked that they couldn't get comparable terms. So this is kind of like a reaction to this. So Amazon has a similar program. They only offer up to 100,000 in credits to qualified startups.
Huh.
So then Microsoft said, okay, here's $500,000 that they give to Y Combinator, and a bunch of, you know, other Microsoft partners were like, hey, what about us? So Microsoft said, okay, fine. Then we'll extend it to $120,000. Now that's pretty darn cool, because that really is like cocaine plus. Is that what they call it? There was a really good phrase here and here, but there's something like that basically says it's getting, this is what gets people to actually try using the cloud for their programs that they're actually standing up. So,
crack cocaine of cloud adoption.
There you go, crack cocaine. Good searching there.
Cloud credits could be dubbed the crack cocaine of cloud adoption because they're a way to get new companies hooked on a given cloud for free or cheap. Yeah, there you go.
First bag's free.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly.
I don't know anything about that. It's just what I hear in movies.
That's pretty sweet, though. Like, if you think about this, like 5 years old and less than $1 million in revenue, that's quite a lot of companies that are starting up. And 120,000 in Azure credits.
That's big.
I think it's 10K a month. So you can't just go start up like the way I think I read somewhere that it's 10K a month. So you don't get 120K all up front. And so you can't just blow it all on like Godzilla VMs and just like totally mine Bitcoin or something.
Yeah. I got like 50 Godzilla VMs with the D-Series premium storage.
Yeah, I spent $120,000 on Azure and I got $30 worth of Bitcoins.
Rustinovich is like, that's not what we intended.
That's not what we intended. Yeah. So I think that's pretty sweet. Like that's, I don't know. I work at Microsoft, so I'm jaded. But if you do a bunch of work with Azure, there's a lot of companies this would kick ass for.
Hey, I think this is a big deal. I mean, you may be jaded, but I'm jaded on it too. You know, there's another podcast, .NET Rocks by Carl Franklin and Richard Campbell. And they, every episode they do, they say, hey, you know, we give away $5,000 to a lucky winner. So they ask the guest on the show, if you had $5,000, what would you spend it on? What technology would you spend it on? And for me, I mean, that's what I would want. I'm like, I'd like Azure credits because it's basically giving me a ton of hardware, access to a ton of hardware to do some really cool stuff. I mean, I could blow that really quick. It's like walking into Mandalay Bay in Las Vegas. I could blow $5,000 really quick. But, you know, I'd love to be able to do that with some of the stuff that I'm working on, stand up some really cool VMs and everything. So, yeah. A lot of stuff I can do here.
I like it.
So, hey, another one that we have that kind of goes along with that same kind of credit is that Amazon has actually added yet another option for EC2 VMs to their offering. So they've got, you know, Microsoft has a bunch of different offerings. Amazon's got a kind of almost, it's almost like a Chinese menu. It's kind of overwhelming in the number of different VM options that you have. This one they added are...
It's kind of like they've opted for their SKU strategy for EC2 is the same as their SKU strategy on their retail bookstore.
Yeah, it really is.
Just like all of them. I'll take all of them.
Yeah. This one, these new EC2 instances, they're called M4s. There's five different variations of M4s. And they're built on a custom Intel Xeon Haswell processor with a 2.4 gigahertz clock and can burst up to 3 when the needs demand. So just yet another option. I'm not going to go diving in a whole lot more, but yeah, it's interesting. It's funny because this article is in Fortune, and it says AWS has long been seen as more of a side business for the parent company Amazon. Like, I don't think you got that one right, because I think that that's the majority of their business.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's the other way around now.
Yeah, I mean, AWS runs Amazon. It also runs Netflix, which I believe takes up 30% of the internet every night.
Yeah. Netflix is a good percentage of the internet. The interesting thing about Netflix is it's on Windows on AWS as well, which is kind of cool.
It is interesting.
Yeah, nice. Following on from that, sticking on a similar Amazon vein, I came across this really cool article. It's called Introducing Empire, a self-hosted PaaS built on Docker and Amazon ECS. And this was just like, what? Boom. So this is the story. We'll link to it in the show notes. It's from this company called Remind.com. And this guy, Eric Holmes, wrote the article. But these guys are a Ruby shop, right? And they were already on Heroku, and that was fine for quite a while. They started back in 2011, I think, but it was a Rails app, right? And hosted on Heroku, and things got a little out of hand. So they started scaling up a bunch, and then they got certain size. They're saying here, once we got over 50 employees and 25 million users, and 50 backend services, they started getting the feeling like they needed to be a little more in control than what Heroku would let them, or what Heroku would give them. And so they basically wanted to move their app. And so instead of rewriting it and going to something like IaaS, they wrote a PaaS. As the way I read this is they wrote a PaaS, a platform as a service, built on Docker and hosted in Amazon ECS. And it was like, what?
Yeah.
That's amazing. I was like, okay, so Heroku is a PaaS system, right? For those who don't know Heroku, it's kind of like Azure, where you can take a site and just deploy the site. You don't have to worry about VMs and stuff like that. And they take care of hosting it and running it. So Heroku is kind of the equivalent to the PaaS offering in Azure like that. And so they'd written their entire app around this, you know, Rails, obviously, and were running it in a PaaS environment. And so they wanted to move to Amazon. ECS is what it runs on, which is the EC2 container service, which is, I think, a relatively new service in Amazon, but is basically a system for container-based application deployment, as I understand it, and running.
Yeah, I think it's their Docker solution.
Yeah, yeah. So you pack up your app and deploy it. And I was just like, what? This is kind of crazy. They stated the reasons they did it were lack of control over security. And so they had a whole bunch of microservices service-oriented architecture type app design. And on Heroku, they were seeing that all of these services were exposed to the internet, and they didn't have the fine-grained control and at the network layer and at the security layer that they wanted. So that was number one. Number two was lack of visibility. So they basically wanted to dig into more of the guts of the application from a monitoring and transparency point of view. And then lack of flexibility was number three. So I guess they were just saying, you know, they didn't have enough tweaks and knobs to fiddle with ultimately and get the best perf and the best best networking and, you know, all of that sort of stuff out of it.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting too. I mean, I get the security problem that they were concerned with. I mean, that makes perfect sense. That's something I've heard before as well with PaaS offerings, that essentially everything is internet accessible. There are ways you can block it so that only, like, for example, in Azure, you can say, with a SQL Azure database, you can only open it up to other Azure offerings, Azure services, to be able to talk to that SQL Azure database if something couldn't hit it from the outside. But on the performance side, man, you scroll down to the end of this article. I want to dig into this some more, because you scroll to the end of this article and you see the differences of when they rolled out their deployments. And yeah, the performance, and this is in a good way, the performance just fell off the cliff. I'm trying to understand.
In a good way.
Yeah, I mean, in a good way. You just see these, like,
they fell up the cliff.
Yeah, they fell up the cliff. Essentially, I mean, let me paint a mental picture to the listeners who are hearing this. Imagine like a chart going across, like a cardiogram, where you're seeing like somebody's like heart rate going across, and all of a sudden you see them deploy this to their new architecture that CJ was just explaining, and it looks like all of a sudden the dude had a freaking heart attack, because he just goes flatline right after that. Like, everything just plummets down and goes flatline. So we're definitely going to put a link to this in the show notes. So go take a look at this. Just scroll down to look at the graphs real quick to see, like, wow, that's interesting.
Yeah. Oh, and by the way, it's open source.
Yeah.
So they published up on GitHub. You can go check it out, github.com/remind101/empire is their repo. And you can go read up about it. Basically, like, Heroku style deployment, but on Amazon EC2 container service.
That's crazy. I'd say this open source stuff, it took me a long time to come around to it. And I have a really hard time seeing another way of doing it. Seeing closed source. I mean, I get some products that need closed source, but I having a really hard time not doing anything closed source these days.
Oh, for sure. And especially, you're crazy not to consider your options, right? And it's not like it used to be. I'm just gutted. Now I just don't have enough time in the day to get my head around it all.
Your management, that's why. Whoop. Sorry.
You cut me deep. It hurts, man. It hurts.
Hey, another article that we had that I wanted to just point out here, I'll put a link to in the show notes, is from the Azure Active Directory team. And it's by Alex Simmons. From Microsoft. This was actually posted back in May, but it's something I wanted to definitely highlight. And it talks about how with Windows 10, you're going to be able to join a Windows 10 to the, air quotes here, to the domain, where the domain is an active, an Azure AD directory. And so you'll be able to connect it straight to your directory without needing an Active Directory locally in your environment. This is great for small businesses. You don't need to stand up your own Active Directory. For enterprises, this is also going to be awesome, because you think about mobile device management, not being able to connect to people from remote workers, not having to come into the to the network and get on the VPN, being able to use something like Azure AD Application Proxy, which if you're not familiar with what this technology is, we should dive into this a little bit, get somebody to come on the show and talk to us a little bit about it. But this is unbelievable. So there's a really good demo that I've seen where you can have an application that runs internally on premises in your environment. You create a proxy from your Azure subscription back to this application, and then you could whip out an iPad and do single sign-on straight from your iPad back to the application living on-prem, all through your Azure AD directory. Poof, boom, we're out. It works.
Kapow, drop the mic.
It's crazy how cool this works. So there's a really good, the things that Alex talks about in his blog post is self-provisioning of corporate-owned devices, use of existing organizational accounts, automatic mobile device management, enrollment, single sign-on to company resources in the cloud, single sign-on to on-premises, enterprise-ready Windows Store, support for modern form factors, and the OS state roaming. So things like your desktop wallpaper, tile configuration, Wi-Fi passwords, synchronized across all of your devices, all securely through your Active Directory cloud. I get that today.
Dang.
With being on iOS and OS X. I join a Wi-Fi network, and I say, like, there's a co-workspace that I use here in Jacksonville, and I go downtown. My laptop is connected to it. I log into the network, and then I jump on my iPad and I say, connect to the Cowork Jack's guest network, and I don't have to put a password in because it's synchronized all through my iPad and my OS X and through my iPhone.
Gotcha.
It just synchronizes through all of them. It's like a favorite network that I've trusted. And when it says that, oh, Andrew's trusted it with his account, then we know all of his devices on that account are good.
Yeah, gotcha. Wow, that's pretty sweet.
Yeah, this is cool. This is really cool.
Following on in a similar vein, there's another article we've got here called Microsoft Positioned in the Visionary Quadrant. So, you know, back in episode 79, we talked about cloud-related reports, and we talked about the Gartner Magic Quadrant for, I think at the time it was IaaS, right? Yeah, it was the IaaS Gartner Magic Quadrant. This one is recently released a new Magic Quadrant called the Magic Quadrant for Enterprise Mobility Management, or EMM. So, and this is all about mobile device management, application management, device protection, data protection, identity management, and secure mobile productivity, right? So you've got devices in your organization. Say you brought along your iPad, right? You want to be able to enroll that device or know that if that person is using it for business-related activities, that the data is going to be secure on it, for example. And so there are a whole bunch of products in the space that do this, but Microsoft has one called the Enterprise Mobility Suite, and it's basically a set of cloud services that integrate with Office 365 and the Office mobile applications. Gartner have this Magic Quadrant, the EMM, Enterprise Mobility Management Magic Quadrant, and Microsoft got put in the Visionaries Quadrant. So it's not in the Leaders Quadrant, it's in the Visionaries Quadrant, which is the lower right, as opposed to the top right, which is the Leaders Quadrant, which, you know, Microsoft's not been in this game for all that long in the grand scheme of things. And I think it's, you know, it's fair to say that Microsoft are not the leaders in this area. If you ask the average enterprise what they're using, they're probably using something like MobileIron or something like that, or AirWatch or whatever. And MobileIron and AirWatch are the two highest rated, I guess, scored. Is that the right word?
The furthest top right.
The furthest top right in the leaders quadrant. So yeah, AirWatch is by VMware and that's top right. In the leaders quadrant, MobileIron comes in second. Others like Good Technology, IBM, and Citrix are all in the leaders quadrant. Yeah, so if you've got lots of devices, people bringing things, you know, bring your own device to work, all that sort of stuff, you want to be able to control what happens to your data when it ends up on those devices and the apps that people can use and things. And so that's where enterprise mobility management comes in.
Yeah, this topic is it's interesting. It's kind of a corollary to this, but something just dawned on me. So we mentioned iPad, talking about mobile device management and everything. There's a blog post that I put out the other day, yesterday actually. Well, I guess by the time people hear this, it was last week. That if you have an iPad, and you are a bit of a road warrior and you're on OS X or you're on Windows, doesn't matter, go take a look at it. There's an app that some ex-Apple engineers built called Duet. It's about $16. And once you get this, once you install this, the iOS app, you buy the iOS app, there's a companion app that you install for both either Windows or for OS X. And essentially what it does is that once you take your iPad and you fire up Duet, you can then turn the app on your laptop, and it treats you have to have your iPad plugged in. This works for any of the iPads. It works for a mini or an iPad or an iPad 2 or an iPad Air. But essentially what it does is that it turns your iPad into a second screen. So that's been around for a couple months now. It's pretty cool, pretty useful. I love it. It's great to have a second screen with you when you're on the road. But then a friend of mine, Ben Stenging, actually mentioned this little tool, and it's called a Mountie. So it's by a company called 10-1 Design. And essentially what it does is that it latches on to the side of your laptop screen, just kind of pinches it with a little gripper, and then it pinches the side of your iPad on the other side of the screen. So it literally has like a second screen hanging off of your existing laptop screen.
Ooh, that's kind of cool.
Yeah. So this device is only $20. You can buy it straight from them for $20, or you can get it from Amazon for you can get it from them for $20 plus $5 shipping, or you can get it from Amazon for $24.95 with free shipping from Prime. So it's basically the same thing, but it's slick because it actually angles your iPad a little bit in. But I've already played with it. Like, I haven't done it on a plane yet, but the way I kind of had it set up and tried it a little bit, it totally could work on a plane. So you actually have a second screen on your laptop.
Dude, multi-mon on a plane.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, I'd totally have a nerdgasm if I saw somebody sitting on an airliner with multi-mon.
Oh, it totally works. I mean, you sit there, if you get like you're on the bulkhead seat, or you're on the, you got those economy plus seats closer to the front, or if you're up in the baller section.
Could you get two iPads, one on each side of your laptop? That would be completely kick-ass.
Yeah, I don't know why you you might. You could totally get two of these little devices and hang them up. I mean, and this thing's easy. I mean, this thing fits in the palm of my hand, right? I mean, it's fairly small. It's smaller than my phone, but it does a really good job of hanging up there. So if you go check out my blog, just andrewcollin.com, go look at a post from the week of June 16th, 2015, yeah. And you'll see a couple of pictures. I've got it both hanging in a portrait and in a landscape mode. I've got an iPad Air 2, and I have even set in landscape mode, hanging way off to the side, and it holds it up and doesn't slide or add too much weight to where the screen kind of backs off or anything. But
totally kick ass. If you're going to a conference or something, you need to get some work done, you could crack that thing out and you'd be up and running in no time.
Oh yeah. I mean, for somebody who works from home all the time, I'm used to having two or actually three screens, and there's stuff that I avoid doing it sometimes, but anyway, go just mobile device kind of a thing. Just nice for the road warrior, little tip there. But yeah, I just thought I'd mention it.
Yeah. Nice. Hey, final thing before we wrap up.
Yeah.
I got one little piece of news that's office related. I'm sorry.
No, this is a good one, I think. I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, so yesterday, Box announced, if you're not familiar with Box, it's like a worse version of Office 365. But if you use you see what I did there?
Yeah, good shot there. I see what you did there.
No, Box, run by Aaron Levy, they do a bunch with documents, right? And yesterday they came out and said that over 50% of the things stored in Box are Office documents, Microsoft Office documents.
That number seems low.
You think?
It seems low. Yeah, I would think that Word and Excel, I think that would be like dominating all file types.
Well, no, but by the time you stick pictures in there and MP3s and...
Yeah.
I don't know. I would assume a lot of images.
Well, but for business?
I don't know. You go take a look at your Dropbox and... Do a dump of that and see what you got in there. I bet there's a bunch of code and a bunch of images and a bunch of zips and a bunch of all sorts of things.
If I exclude the porn, I'm sure it's a lot more Office documents. Sorry, that's your Dropbox. My bad.
Don't be polluting my Dropbox with your goodies, my friend.
Just sharing, baby. Sharing is caring.
Yeah, sharing is caring. Okay, so 50% of the stuff in Box is documents. And then And then the announcement that came out with yesterday is said they've got new Office Online integration. So this is something I've personally been working on over the last few months. This allowing partners to, like Box, to integrate with Office Online and Office on iOS, right? So if you've got an iOS app, you can use Office on iOS to view and edit documents that you store in your app. And now we've extended that to Office Online. And so this is the second partner, I believe. Box is the second. Dropbox was the first. Mm-hmm. So if you go into Dropbox and you look at an Office document and you open it, it'll be in their crappy viewer, right? But then in the top right, there's a button that says, you know, open in Office Online or in Word Online or something like that. And you can open it and it'll flip over to Word Online, open it, view it, full fidelity. And then you can edit it there and it'll get saved back to Dropbox. And so the same thing just launched for Box as well. You can open your, you know, Word, PowerPoint and Excel docs using the Microsoft web applications or Office Online.
This is cool because I know that for a while, I know at least in the small business and startup space that a lot of people who are using Dropbox or using Box to store their files, that they're actually doing most of their stuff, they're doing it straight from within the Google apps. But when they go to create new documents, they're being stored in Google Drive. So this is nice because now you guys are simply saying, hey, you can store your documents, store them wherever you want to store them. It works everywhere, but you can take advantage of using the client apps that you're used to using on your desktop, like Word, like Excel, and like PowerPoint.
Yeah.
But store the documents where you're actually using them. So I like your approach more. And I admit that I've been using a lot of Google apps for documents and sheets and everything for different things, but this is nice because it actually lets me keep my docs where I want them to be kept. Now, it'd be really cool if you guys do this with GitHub.
Oh yeah, that's a good idea. Yeah.
I'd love to have it there.
GitHub would be pretty sweet. That'd be nice. Yeah, I hadn't thought of that one. Mm. I'll have to go ask them. Yeah. But yeah, so we it's sort of like co-opetition with Box, right? Because you could argue that we're in competition with Box from Office 365, but it's also, you know, acknowledging like, hey, if you're a Box customer and you're happy with that and whatever, then you could still have a really good Office editing and viewing experience for your docs.
This is the attitude that Microsoft has had. I mean, to me, it's since Satya kind of took over, which is, you know, we don't care if you're on iOS. Are you using Outlook in the Office 365? Yes. Well, then that's all we care about. We don't care if you're using OS X, but are you using an Xbox? Yeah. Well, that's what we care about. Are you using any of our stuff? Yes. We just want you using some of our stuff. So we don't care what else you're using. We just want to make sure that all of our stuff plays well with everybody else, which is going the complete different direction than Apple goes.
Yeah, totally. And if you know Aaron Levy, he hasn't been the most Microsoft-friendly guy in the world before, but he sort of changed his tune. He sort of said, in this article, he says, "This is not a trivial change," Levy wrote. "Unlike the desktop where you can open and exchange data between various applications, basic affordances of a desktop file system, the same hasn't been true on the web. And by opening up Office Online, Microsoft is showing an amazing amount of proactive enablement for moving the future of work this direction." So he's basically saying, like, we've had this capability on the desktop for donkey's years, right? But not on the web. And so, good guy, Microsoft.
Yeah, that's a good job.
Cool. All right. Well, that wraps up our news and announcements we've got for this week. Definitely get in touch. Leave us a review. Send us your questions. We'd love to hear more from you. If there's a topic that you want to hear about or hear us geek out about, we'd love to do that. So definitely get in touch. And thanks again, AC.
Absolutely, yeah. Hey, next week, I mean, by the time people hear this, it'll be Tuesday. What is it, June? When is this going to come out? This will come out on June 23rd. And so the day after this comes out, you and I will both be in San Francisco for the SP TechCon Dev Days conference on the June 24th through the 26th. So, you know, it'd be really cool. If anybody has any ideas and stuff we'd like to chat about, you know, hit us up over there. We'd love to sit down and, you know, talk to you about what, you know, projects you're working on, cloud-related projects, Azure-related projects, Office 365-related projects, Microsoft Cloud. Hell, I mean, you're doing stuff with Amazon, Google, hybrid. We'd love to sit down and just talk to you for 5-10 minutes. Do you think, it's not that interesting? You know, people like to hear real-world stuff. So I'd really like to, you know, grab a hold of us, let us know. We'd love to talk to you about it.
Also, as a little bit of a sneak peek, which we're working on lining up an interview with with a head of technical marketing for Google Compute Platform as well. So hopefully that will be on the cards in the next month or so. We've got to work on schedules and all that, but that'll be super interesting. So definitely stay tuned for that. Hey, and if you are going to SP TechCon Developer Days next week in California, then come say hi. I'm doing a keynote called Who Moved My Cheese? The New Landscape of Development in the Cloud, SharePoint, and Office 365.
Awesome. I'll be, I'm going to be there. I've got a couple breakout sessions on Thursday about TypeScript and Node.js and Angular. And then I've got a whole half day workshop on getting the your ramp up to the to Office 365 in the cloud. But hey, the fun part is earlier in the week on Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday of that week, I'm actually going to be at Angular U, which actually happens to be in the exact same hotel. and I'm doing a session on Microsoft technologies with Angular on Tuesday, and then I'm doing a full day workshop on Wednesday for Angular U. I'm actually going to miss Dev Days, one day of Dev Days, because I'm going to be at Angular U doing a full workshop on Microsoft technologies with Angular, and it's all going to be about Azure and hosting your stuff in Azure and Azure AD, TypeScript.
I might have to sneak into that.
Come on in, man.
What day is that?
We got cookies. It'll be all day Wednesday.
Gotcha, gotcha.
All day Wednesday. They're like 30 people or so that are actually going to be in that all day. So it'll be fun.
Nice. I'll bring along some Microsoft swag for you.
Ooh, hey, that'd be cool. That'd be fun, man.
Nice. All right, AC, cheers very much.
Yep, good show, man.
See you next week.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. You can subscribe to us in iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.